Hello and welcome to the WadFam Chalk Pod. I'm Dylan Weaver.
And I'm Andrew Acebo.
And this week we are joined by a surprise special guest. It's
Adam Deckard.
Hey! Yay!
What's up, guys?
He returns. I don't know. Normally I do like superlatives and whatnot off the top, but I didn't give you that. So I'm sorry.
That's fine.
You know him from the episode The Snow Day and being our oft-mentioned friend.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And,
Did we call you?
I called in one time.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And being that was earlier, I believe, on this series. You were on the episode Third Degree
that we released
back in February.
Yeah.
Because we had a long conversation with you about what it means to be Third Degree.
Yeah.
So we're so glad to have you back here.
I'm so glad to be back
the
on.
The Third Degree himself.
Yeah. You're saying that you and I are first and second, Andrew, and then he's the third?
Yeah.
See, I personally like to think of the guest as the first, but, you know, however.
No.
As long as I'm in the middle, I don't care.
No. I'm definitely in the bottom in here.
I disagree. Anyway.
I think I'm definitely...
Adam, this is we're here talking about episode 355, which is The Search for Wit Part 1.
Woo!
An episode that you I think from the moment this podcast started said
yeah.
I want that one.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that a little
bit?
Yeah.
The Search for Wit was like probably my most favorite episodes of Odyssey as a whole that I listened to the most times, even when you guys started doing it, I started listening to it again, because I hadn't listened to it, you know, in a while. And then when you started the podcast, I was like, oh man, Search for Wit. And I've listened to it too many times since in the last couple of years. I mean, this year alone, I probably have listened to it like 5 or 8 times.
Wow.
They're short episodes. Like, they're great.
No, they are.
Right. Yeah.
Listeners to the podcast might not know Adam is like a serial rewatcher.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so I have like a ton of sentimental value to these episodes, and like they always carried so much like enjoyment and just fun, and like they're different than the rest of Odyssey to me in that they are just like fun stories that aren't like trying to push anything. Like they're just their own thing. They're having fun. I love Indiana Jones. They're very Indiana Jones-esque. So it's like, you know, can't compare. So
yeah, to the extent where like the cover art, like the current cover art for this album, which is also called The Search for Wit, no creativity shown there, but has Jason cosplaying as Indiana Jones.
Right. And there's scenes, yeah, we'll get into it.
Yeah. Well, and I guess this is, it's really appropriate we're covering it here and now in the run-up to a new Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah.
You guys go see The Dial of Destiny on June 30th?
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I didn't know that was what it's called.
Oh boy.
If I'm wrong...
That does not sound real.
I just said that with so much confidence, and I really hope that I'm wrong, because that would make for way
better... No, Dial of Destiny. That's what it is.
Oh my gosh. Oh, but...
That's brutal.
Yeah.
That's like the, like... That sounds like the second Lara Croft's movie with Angelina Jolie. The
Tomb Raider?
No, yeah, the Tomb Raider, but the second one that has a really stupid name.
Oh.
I don't think Dial of Destiny is that bad. I feel like it's in
The Cradle of Life. That's what it's called. Cradle of Life.
Ah, okay. Yeah. No, Dial of Destiny, Cradle of Life. That is the same title.
Yeah, same thing.
but I don't know. I kind of dig Dial of Destiny.
Okay.
I feel like it's in line with, you know,
hopefully what the movie is, as titles are.
I hope it's good. I really do.
Yeah, it just feels like, I don't know, it feels like a nice return to form as far as titles go.
Sure.
It'll be, I don't know, mildly interested in it as a movie. We'll see
if it actually gets
my butt in the seat.
Sure.
I saw the trailer for it earlier this week.
You watched the trailer? No way.
Well, I was at the movie theater, so you can't avoid them. I mean, you can, and I have as a younger man. Nowadays, I'm just like, I'm here. I do not need to, like, stare at the floor during the trailer segment. That is too much.
Sure.
Flee from temptation.
You say, like, you're an old man, okay?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I'm Harrison Ford aged here.
Pretty much.
But yeah, Dial of, Dial of Destiny. It's coming out soon. This this episode is not sponsored by Disney or Lucasfilm, but if they'd like to,
certainly, you know, I'll take that money.
I'm here. Yeah. Give me a call, James Mangold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been so many guests that have talked about these episodes if they have previous affinity with Odyssey or in for it. Like, I feel like the Search for Wit is kind of iconic in some regard. Like, I think it separates new fans and old fans, maybe. I don't know. It exists in this weird, like, mythical status within the Odyssey universe, at least in my head. I don't know. Dylan, what's your experience with it?
Well, I'm so glad that I have the two of you on to hear about my experience with this episode, because I very formatively remember getting this album from the church library that we all attended.
Wow, I can't believe it was actually there. I didn't have it checked out and not returned.
Just wait, Adam. And I was listening through the album from the top, and I listened to part one of The Search for Wit, and part two and three were missing from the thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so...
I wonder who had that.
For years...
It couldn't have been me.
Had not heard part two and three.
No way!
Until they were re-airing on the radio and I started listening to it online. Because how was I going to listen to it if the church library did not have that cassette?
You should have asked me. Certainly. The odds are that I had it.
I did not know you at the time, but yes, okay, I can confirm you had it.
Yeah.
Because it was in your bedroom when we moved you out.
Yeah, that checks out.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, well, LAFC. So
this is the thing. I'm pretty sure I also have a copy of The Search for Wit with LEFC written on it in Sharpie.
CDs or cassettes?
It's a cassette.
Oh, sure. Interesting.
Huh. Yeah, so I'm...
They probably bought multiple copies.
Yeah, so we probably cleaned them out.
Yeah, I think that there might be more than one guilty party for specifically these episodes.
I couldn't ask for two better guests.
Oh, yeah.
It is so absurd that I... So I remember as a kid being so upset because typically Odyssey was very good about putting multi-parts on the same cassette. You didn't get a part one and a part two stretched over two cassettes. They put those on the same one. So if you lost one, you lost both.
Right.
And I remember as a kid being upset that they would separate part one and two to even allow this to be able to happen. And then years down the road discovering, oh, the reason they did that was because it was three parts.
Yep.
And they couldn't fit three parts on one cassette. So it is just so, so funny to me. Also, side note, they could fit.
I feel like this is like a therapy session. Like, honestly, this is held accountable.
Yeah. Also, they could fit three episodes on one cassette if they wanted.
Really?
You can fit up to 120 minutes on cassette.
Then you could do six episodes. What? That's
correct.
Crazy.
They could almost do six. They could for sure do four, but I guess plastic was free back in the day. Huh. So,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, the way they split it is not necessarily it's not bad, but
sure.
And then obviously when it came out on CD, all three of the episodes are on one CD because you could start doing that. But it is just, there aren't too many like specific memories I have from that age. So it's very funny that I'm like, one of them was being upset that they had split The Search for Wit onto more than one cassette. Cause that wouldn't have got me into this problem. And then I remember when it was airing on the radio, trying to record it onto a cassette tape.
Oh, man.
So that I could donate it to the church library so they would have a complete set.
Oh, man.
Dylan?
You're such a good person, Dylan.
And I just, like, I didn't wind up being home when the episode actually aired for us. And I just listened online. But I remember, like, seeing it in the upcoming episodes and being like, okay, we have blank cassettes. My cassette tape or my cassette player records. Can I do this? And like successfully record it off the radio onto a cassette tape to put in the church library. And then not being able to make it work.
That's incredible. Goes. Dylan's the anti, me and Andrew.
Yeah, no way. I mean, well, I must say, like, I really didn't go to the church library that frequently. It was much more my older siblings.
So you're going to blame.
Oh, yeah, Colleen 100%. And Brendan. I didn't go to the church library that much.
Wow.
That's messed up.
Well, because it was only open between first and second service, and I always came late to second service, so it was always closed.
Wait, Andrew was late to something?
No way.
Every time.
What a novel idea. All right.
You know, I wouldn't say... Percentage-wise, I feel like it's evening out.
Yeah.
Law of averages.
Yeah, sure. You are fighting very hard to... not be the person that your parents raised you to be.
And yes. Are you harassing me?
You are not as late as I am making it out to seem. I'm doing this for comedic effect. I am sorry. I know this is one of your insecurities, and I shouldn't poke at it as much as I do.
Oh, it's okay. Just as long as you make sure that makes it in the edit.
Yeah. That's what the people need, is me being overly sincere. Anyways, the episode at hand. The Search for Wit Part 1. It's an episode first aired May 18th of 1996. It is written and directed by Mr. Paul McCusker. Kind of unsurprisingly.
Yeah, not shocking there.
It is the, I think the first episode we're covering in this arc that like aired in the 96 season.
I will say I was not shocked this wasn't Phil Lollard. I don't think Phil Lollard has this in him.
Yeah.
Now, Kathy Buchanan totally could have done it. But Tasha would have been written better if Kathy Buchanan would have written this. Because we love Kathy Buchanan.
She can do whatever.
She's great.
Wow, someone listens to our podcast.
Yeah, you know, way too much. Although not as much lately, but, you know.
Hey, you know, like all good things, it must come in moderation.
No. I binged the podcast so hard last year.
Oh, okay. All right. That makes sense. Well, maybe. I don't know.
It made sense to me. I loved it.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad.
I got to listen to two of my favorites all day, every day.
You flatter us. So the episode originally aired May 18th of 1996, which is like a full 2 years after it began with A Rabbit's Foot, which is like our last Hal Smith as Wit episode. Aired. Then we had like But Not Forgotten, which is like the episode where they write Wit off the show. Which then aired in September of 94, and now we're finally making it to May of 96, and we have a return of Wit.
2 years? Dun, dun, dun. That's crazy! I didn't know it was that long!
Yeah. Well, wow. There's a lot of... I mean, there's what, at least 4 albums without Wit?
There are five.
Six.
Six albums? Wow. 6 albums without Wit, basically.
Insane.
Crazy.
Yeah, because his last episode is on album 20. And
it's
this
almost
is
like they should have just killed him off.
Andrew, we don't wish these things. but yeah, I mean, the entirety of Blackheart happens. Well, not the entirety, but like the big album of like Darkness Before Dawn happens in the 2 years without Wit. Like some stuff has gone down.
Yeah.
Jason and Jack did not exist, you know, before the years without Wit. I mean, Jason did briefly in Immortal Coil, but whatever. The point is, it's been a while and we're here. So just to set up like some context for this three-parter, like they wrote Wit off the show not really knowing what they were going to do, but sending him off to the Middle East. And in fall of 95, the Chuck Bolte, who was the executive producer at the time, got a call from a radio station manager in Seattle. That manager heard a commercial on a local station with a voice that he thought was Hal Smith.
Oh.
But he knew Hal Smith had died, And so he contacted the station, and the station hooked him up to the ad agency, and the ad agency hooked him up to the actor, which was Paul Herlinger.
Wow. And absolutely so this, nuts.
Yeah.
That's so many hoops.
Right. And so this random, like, radio station manager in Seattle calls up Focus on the Family and is like, hey, I've heard a guy who sounds like Hal Smith. Would you, like me to put you in contact with him?
That's crazy. I mean, like, I love that. Like, it feels like... I don't know, one of those stories that's so strange it has to be real, but
yeah.
What?
I know. That's and crazy. So like
he just heard like, it on like was he advertising cars? Like where right, did yeah, he find this wit?
Correct. He was just doing an ad and yeah. Like he's one of the ones where like if you look at IMDb, like Paul Herlinger is not mm-hmm. like an established voice actor in the way that so many people in this show are. Mm-hmm. He was obviously a talented vocal performer, but mm-hmm. like
sure.
They found him kind of accidentally mm-hmm. and
kind of just for wit.
yeah
and so they wound up like Paul McCusker hopped on the phone with Paul Herlinger and like mm-hmm. they chatted a little bit and McCusker goes to Bolte and is like, hey, like I think that this is gonna be our guy. And so Chuck Bolte flies to Seattle mm-hmm. and he gets Herlinger to record earlier episodes of the show like to just as just auditions, so like scripts they already had
mm-hmm.
locked in from years previous to be like, hey, can you read through this, give us your performance, and then like kind of that's going to be our audition tapes. And they brought it back and were like, yeah, I think this works.
Dang. That's insane.
And so they went there and wrote The Search for Wit, mm-hmm. which they wrote as a three-parter to be a... This could be the close to Wit,
mm-hmm.
or this could be the way we bring him back.
Interesting. Oh, okay.
Very.
So depending on... how it was going to go over with the audience, how they felt at the end of it, whatever. Sure. Like, they were like, hey, here's our chance to, you know, clear it out. Like, mm-hmm.
To either end it or bring it back. Like,
to bring closure one way or the other. Right. So they wind up doing that. They introduce him in this episode without any real fanfare and over the phone, like in this recording, as a, and this part feels very Phil Lawler, but they specifically did it as like a jab at the audience because they had previously reused lines from Hal Smith from his run as Wit on the phone, both in A Time Has Come and But Not Forgotten, or Gone. Mm-hmm. Maybe both?
Yeah.
Regardless, like, they had done those episodes where they... I think it is just Gone. But where they reused audio, and, like, Odyssey nerds reached out and were like, haha, we figured out which episodes you pulled those random lines for.
mm-hmm.
And so in kind of a, like, we're going to pull one over on you, they did the phone gag in this episode to see if they could, like, sell it as, hey, maybe people think we're just going to be reusing lines again.
Oh, so they used the answering machine to soft launch new Wit.
Andrew, I could not have said it better.
There's something to be said about Gen Z lingo, and soft launch is something I don't like, but I do acknowledge its reality. Okay, maybe we should roll the promo.
Yeah, well, that's what I was about to say, is I think we've really hit on what I've got context-wise, and the rest we can just roll as we record.
It's a high-stakes, dangerous chase. Next time on Adventures in Odyssey. Eugene and Jason discover cryptic messages from an old friend who may be in grave danger. Trusting no one, our dynamic duo must trail clues to the Middle East and to the biggest cover-up in human history. All that and more on the next Adventure in Odyssey.
Wow, that went on so long after it ended. Holy cow.
They always do, Adam.
Wow, but so much more than usual. What was the car noises behind it? I'm upset.
It's a chase.
Oh, that was...
Clearly.
Oh. So this promo is good for this episode and part two, but not part three. So okay. I'm wondering if there's more of a car chase in part two.
There is.
Okay.
But...
So maybe, I guess that's what they were playing homage to there. Okay. All I can say is that I am so impressed with their restraint to not spoil the return of Wit in that promo.
That's so true.
Because they usually do. Like, usually when there's big reveals, they don't, like, shy away from it at all. They're just kind of like, we're just going to hit you with it.
Yeah.
Which also, the teaser for this episode doesn't spoil it either in a way that's really nice.
I think it's interesting that, and I think it plays to the whole soft launch of it all. Like, they're not really playing it up that it's a big change, and maybe that's the angle that they figured would be the most successful for a replacement Wit, and for continuity's sake, is to not really pull the curtain back at all and just have it feel as natural to the narrative as possible. But yeah, it's very, I was equally surprised that they did not mention it. They did mention before, like, we knew that Wit was going to the Middle East from Gone and Not Forgotten. So, like, you could put two and two together, and obviously it's on the album The Search for Wit, so.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, the episode airing, the title gives it away, but I don't know that you get the title if you're listening on the radio in real time.
Oh, no, you certainly don't.
So, safe in that regard?
Jokes on the audience, they never find Wit. It's the search for Wit and they don't find him.
That's true, it's not like the recovery of Wit. They're just looking for him.
Yeah, yeah. Jason goes to Israel and then is disappointed and goes home.
Well, yeah, no, Wit's gonna come out when he's ready to come out, you know? And we don't get to find him, he gets to present himself.
Oh, man. This episode begins with just absolute glory as Wit... as Jason is working on the answering machine and frustratedly goes, "Operate, you worthless hunk of," and then the answering machine beeps.
Yeah, that is top notch.
It's not an Odyssey joke.
Not at all.
And I love that it's here.
Yeah.
And what do we think, guys? Fill in the blank. What was Jason going to end that sentence with?
Ooh,
crap.
No.
Lame, Andrew.
Yeah, no, not crap. Maybe piece of baloney? Piece of hunk of junk?
Hunk of junk.
Yeah, hunk of junk like feels that. Very Jason.
I was going to say it feels more Bernard, but... Dylan, what do you think?
I was just going to say...
Oh.
So yeah, they're having answering machine problems, but Jason Jason and Eugene together hear a message on the answering machine of left by Wit, and it's Paul Herlinger doing a great job saying that he is in Chicago because of an archaeological discovery and that he shipped something to their shop, and it's very nonchalant. Mm-hmm. In a way that, kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like, I like how little they're playing it up right here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like, for how much is coming and how exciting the rest of it is, they set it up pretty nonchalantly, which is very welcomed.
Right, and it speaks to that thing of, like, I don't know, what I can just imagine is Phil Lawler, like, laughing in a closet somewhere, coming up with this scheme of, like, oh, we're gonna, like, pull a fast one with the audiences and have them, like, going through our archives because this guy we got to voice, his voice is so much the same that the audience is gonna be like, wait, when did Hal Smith record that line? Which, like, I don't know, maybe they did do, but is...
Sure.
But also, the end of the episode has the credit for Paul Herlinger, I guess, but you don't necessarily know who that is or who he's playing, and I don't think they credit Hal Smith in the episodes that they reuse audio. I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
But it is just, yeah, I don't know. It plays very well. Like, it's weird to be like, this is like the most hyped up episode of our show, and it just be like very casual mention that, like, oh, it's here. And neither Eugene nor Jason seem like blown away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not the, it's Eugene when like Eugene returns. It's just a very much like, oh, Mr. Whitaker's calling.
Sure.
And Jason's like, ah, I missed a call from Dad. Mm-hmm. And like, that's it.
Yeah.
Well, because clearly, obviously, it's, like, trying to establish the fact that he's still alive and in somewhat of contact with them.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think that it's interesting because it kind of establishes pretty clearly that, like, Witt's archaeological history that isn't shown on the show is, like, very real. So that, like, the idea that he could have found something, sent it, and, you know, to have, like, having an archaeological document or find... looked at by a professor at a university across the world, like, that's just ho-hum for Witt when he is out in the field.
Yeah.
Just another day in the life of Indiana Whitaker.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't know. Archaeology
is pretty Illinois? Is he Illinois Whitaker?
I was thinking John Jones. You know, John Jones, archaeologist extraordinaire.
I don't know why my mind went to Carmen Sandiego.
Well, because Carmen Sandiego's an Indiana Jones, like, they're doing the same thing.
Oh, is it? I don't know anything about Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah, I don't know.
Where in the world is she?
Yeah.
So
that's my number one question.
The people want to know.
No, the people already know. It's just me.
So Witt has shipped a micro cassette. They go into the kids radio to play it back, and it is, of course, an audio diary, because how else are you going to, like, record, like, keep record of something on an audio drama? Like, it's such it's great. And
I would have accepted reading a printed diary. That would have been fine.
Sure, but that would have been too close to Indiana Jones.
And?
Like, this is the audio version of Indiana Jones, and in Indiana Jones they had the written diary, and in this they have the recorded diary.
This is going to be a really bad time for me to say that I only watched one Indiana Jones movie once, and I barely paid attention.
Oh, which
Andrew
one?
Andrew Acebo.
I...
No wonder you were so quiet when I talked about the Dial of Destiny.
Man.
No, I'm excited for
you
it.
You should be, like, ashamed
of
yourself.
Genuinely
no.
You're not allowed to be excited for it, Andrew.
Nope.
You've... Okay.
I'll stop I've removed it. Your privileges.
You're done.
Okay.
That's, which one?
Know... Yeah.
What?
Which one have you seen?
Know which one you've seen.
Yeah, the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Okay.
Okay.
The
okay.
first one. Yeah.
At least you've seen Raiders.
Right.
But, like, come on, man. That is a big... Like, I feel like you have to at least watch The Last... Like, watch Raiders again and pay attention, and then watch The Last Crusade.
Yeah,
if you don't want to watch the other two, that's fine, but, like, those two
watch
movies...
Watch the first two? Are they both...
No, that's no. 1 and 3, my dude.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I skipped over Temple of Doom.
Yeah, you don't need to watch Temple of Doom. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is not bad. I think it gets way too much hate.
I agree. I think that movie is better than the way people make it, but, like... Yeah.
It's also still not... I don't know anything about it.
Raiders and Last Crusade are, like, fantastic.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting.
You'll like The Search for Witt so much more if you watch them.
Well, and my exposure to all of this was, like, through UHF, which was a spoof on it. So, like, it was really hard for me to, like, be like, okay,
This is the serious original source material for this joke that right. exists in my head. So I don't know. I just, yeah. And like my dad was never super into it. Like in the same way that, you know, Star Wars and Jurassic Park were like huge. Like,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas I didn't get the Jurassic Park dad, but I did get the Indiana Jones dad.
I got both. Go. So, you know.
Yeah.
We all love your dad, Adam.
It's yeah. True. You know, my dad's D-Deck. The best. It's fine. Love you, D-Deck. I'm sure he's not going to listen to this, but maybe.
Hey, look, if ever there was an episode for him to start on, it's probably this one, right?
I mean, that's mm-hmm. so fair.
Mm-hmm. Unless he misses you 4 years ago, then he could listen to Snow Day.
It's true.
That's very true.
Adams of Christmas is past. Wit in this audio diary talks about how this is... the most significant archaeological find since the Dead Sea Scrolls. Mm-hmm. Imagine it. The Q. And then he mentions a Professor Charles at the mm-hmm. university in Chicago mm-hmm. that he is flying to Chicago. And the phone call then comes from Chicago. And yeah, there's a little bit at the end. They speed through to the end of the recording. And there is some backwards audio.
Very clearly backwards.
Yeah.
This is the thing, okay? So, in a previous episode, name not a number, we have Jason immediately realizing that Tasha is blinking in Morse code.
Yeah.
Right.
But in this episode, he can't figure out that they just backmasked the audio.
Yeah, he didn't just, like, flip it around.
And cool. it's so funny to me. And it's like, clearly Jason should have watched Twin Peaks, a favorite of the writer of this episode, Paul McCusker. He's a secret Twin Peaks fan, as we've talked about many times mm-hmm. on this show.
Yep.
And like it's just like, come on. Like you immediately hear that and you go, well, that's just Witt's voice in reverse.
Yeah.
Right.
It ends with Jason just backwards. Like, right. How did he not figure that out?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and also remember is a word that basically sounds the same forwards and backwards.
Yeah.
Right.
But also, like, backwards vocals have such a distinct quality because you have, like, the reversed breath.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, yeah, it's very funny to me that Jason didn't get it, but it's
right. Especially, it's fine. It gives, especially because Jason's like such like a spy guy, and like right, I know. That feels like something very reasonable that like the company, the government agency yeah. would use. Like,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, I guess he's not part of the company anymore, so maybe this is beyond his recognition. You know,
yeah. So here's a question for the nerds. How do you think Witt did the backmasking here? Did he record onto the tape while it was spinning in reverse, or did he fold the tape over itself and record on it forward and then fold it back? Because those are two different ways to record backwards on a cassette, and I'm a nerd, so I know this.
I'm gonna go with the second one because it sounds like it would be easier to do quickly. Was that a rhetorical question?
I feel like I'm going with he put it in reverse and recorded over it because that just seems more like Witt than just flipping the tape over.
Fair.
Like, that feels like, to me, the most straightforward thing is, like, if you want to record something backwards, just put it in reverse and record it that way.
But the more fancy thing is to be like, oh, I can fold this piece of film halfway around and then record and then fold it back, right?
See, that just feels like much work that in the desert you wouldn't want to do.
This is the dumbest conversation I have forced anyone to have with me, and you're welcome.
Thank you.
We love it.
So then there is a discussion of what it means that he says the Q.
Mm-hmm.
And Eugene says a line that is one of the glued in my mind lines.
Interesting.
Where he says Q is a British expression for a line. And I have no idea why that is stuck in my head, but I think about that one a lot.
Huh.
And I can, like, I know the delivery of that line perfectly.
Maybe it taught you that as a kid? Like,
correct. In an era, guys, in an era before the Netflix queue,
mm-hmm.
we have this line.
Oh, yeah.
To the extent that when I got Netflix and saw the word Q, I went, oh, I get the Odyssey joke now.
Wow. That's crazy.
Very so, nice.
I'm not going to lie. I don't know that I caught that joke at all, quite frankly.
Oh, I thought it was funny. I thought it was cool that it was very underhanded. I don't know.
Yeah. It's, that's what, like, I mean, rather than going and standing in a line, British people go and stand in a queue.
Right.
You're queuing and then for
that's,
something.
And then that's the word that Netflix decided to take, and then every streaming service had to kind of follow suit, even if they don't literally, that is what everyone thinks of it as.
Yeah.
Even if it's called your watch list, you still think of it as the queue.
Right.
And that's a Netflix thing, and that, obviously, this episode predates that.
Huh.
So.
Interesting. Okay.
But it's still called the formative... watch. I mean, it's called your watch list on Netflix now.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Funny.
Right. I guess
now the queue is more like Spotify now.
Yeah.
Right. True. Yeah. Every mm-hmm. playlist.
Like a music queue.
Yeah.
But that makes more sense because they're in line.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and that's the reason Netflix used it is because when you used to get one DVD after the other.
Yeah.
Sure.
You had a queue of DVDs. Where it would cycle through them and you knew which one was coming up.
Right, right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay, well, and there was
previously.
Like.
That makes sense.
There was like a whole science to like Netflix queuing because you would like queue up a bunch of shows that you wanted to try out and then you could go back and change the order if you like found one that you really liked. And yeah, no. It was a whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Such a thing.
I don't know. It's permanently imprinted in my brain.
I know, you make it sound so much more difficult than what it is.
It's not difficult, it's just something that I remember, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it's
there
aren't
too many of those things, so.
It also doesn't really exist anymore, so there's that in yeah, because obviously Netflix canceled its DVD subscription, so I don't know, it feels kind of archaic.
Yeah.
Sure.
So the whole thing, they're trying to figure out what the Q is. This is this whole thing where they're like, what do we think Q refers to? Maybe it's a pool cue. That doesn't sound like dad. Whatever. Maybe it's Q is in the British expression for a line. Nope. I don't know. Maybe we should check 4chan. but they can't quite figure out what Q is. And that was my QAnon joke that I really worked up to because I couldn't quite figure out how to land it.
Very nice.
So,
yeah, well done.
There we go.
Yeah.
Was that good?
Sure.
I appreciate it. Actually, that was worth the time.
Oh, my word. Okay. So
I'm very excited to talk about the Q document, though, because it's... I did a little bit of research on it after listening to this episode, and it's not... One, it doesn't exist. And two, we...
It's theoretical.
It's a hypothesis, and there's really not a ton of evidence outside of... the similarities that
I'll introduce what it is in the episode and then we can go from there into what. So then Eugene goes, wait, what if the thing that Wit found, they like leave this scene and then they come into another scene. An issue I have with this episode is that it is just Eugene and Jason and Connie is like very absent and we keep leaving scenes with like it's all a plot. So we keep leaving scenes with Eugene and Jason to come back. Other scenes with Eugene and Jason in different locations with time not really progressing.
No.
Like they don't seem to do anything except for when they're together.
Yeah.
But they keep separating.
Well, time stops for them when an ad break happens. So,
so they hear the cut music and they just stop talking. Like, okay, we have to wait now.
Yeah. So they come back together, and Eugene is like, what if it's the Q document, which is a, like, Eugene explains it as a, like, hypothetical source for Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Which is interesting because Witt says, like, the most significant archaeological find since the Dead Sea Scrolls. And I would argue that if Witt found the Q document that is larger than the Dead Sea Scrolls, but, mm-hmm. you know, eh. But, Andrew, go on to explain your research on the Q document.
Oh, I mean, it's just a weird thing that exists within biblical history that scholars have, like, created this idea. Just reading from the Encyclopedia Britannica, because that's research. biblical literature, a hypothetical Greek language proto-gospel that might have been in circulation in written form about the time of the composition of the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, approximately between 65 and 95 AD. The Q name was coined by German theologian Johann Weiss, or Weiss, I guess, if you say it in German.
It's probably Weiss, but...
You know. Johann Weiss, probably.
Yeah. Most biblical scholars agree that Matthew and Luke were based their written account largely on Mark, but Matthew and Luke also have, like, sayings of Jesus that aren't included in Mark, and that's where they think it came from, this mystery source, this, like, Q document.
Huh.
That these people both had, like, sayings of Jesus that were similar, but they would have no joint connection to it because it's not present in Mark.
Right. The gist basically being, like, Mark is the shortest of the three Gospels and is more or less, like, kind of just history. And so
it was, like, the first one.
A lot of the speeches. Some people would argue that. A lot of people would argue it's not, but...
Really?
You know,
yeah. Oh, okay. I was taught that it's the first one. That it was the one that was written the most quickly after Jesus'
death. Yeah, I think that there's good support for that. I've also heard Matthew argued pretty hard as the first one.
Sure.
Everybody loves Matthew.
I think there's good reason. It is... so obvious if you read Matthew and Mark that one of them had to come first because they are so dang similar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so basically the idea is that, which is interesting because Eugene explains it as a source for Matthew, Mark, and Luke, which is not the actual theory. Mm. The like theory is that there's Mark and there's Q, and mm-hmm. then Matthew and Luke pull from Q and from Mark.
Yeah.
Right.
And so there's these two source documents, Mark being the more history, Q being the more, like, Jesus's sermons and sayings, and, you know, that is how we wound up with Matthew and Luke, which is, yeah, I mean, it's a theory that exists, and I don't know. There are obviously scholars who think that there is validity to this idea. I don't think it's a particularly prevalent theory, especially now.
Mm-hmm.
But
I've
heard way more compelling explanations for how the Gospels were assembled than this one. But
yeah,
know,
right.
It's out there.
Yeah.
So that's the Q document. So they then are like, well, if it's really as serious as this is, we should go to Chicago. And so Eugene and Jason hop on a plane to Chicago. And when they arrive at the school, there's a broken door and a busted window at which Eugene quips, "This must be a progressive school."
Yeah.
That's brutal. It's gotta so it. Rough, Eugene.
Dylan worked at a progressive school.
Would you like to go on?
No.
No.
Yeah, that's
no.
good.
Just stating a fact.
Sure. I worked at a community college, of which this show is obviously
was
a
it,
pretty big fan.
Was it
of.
Campbell County Community College?
No, that's a university, actually.
Oh, you're right.
It must be in order to...
Yeah. You know, have those laboratories and such.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're receiving funding from Big Andromeda, so, like,
yeah.
clearly...
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And Eugene's going for a master's, so they've got to, obviously, provide such degrees.
Yeah.
Very true. So
his master's is in everything? I'm
yeah,
pretty sure.
No, that is true. No, I thought it was in soil deposits, Andrew. So Professor Charles is not there. Instead, we've got Gary Burkett,
mm-hmm.
Who is
phenomenal.
TA for
gotta love
Charles.
It.
And
an unpaid intern.
Arguably the most suspicious character in this episode.
100%. Oh. Absolutely.
Like, there's a guy to come who should be more suspicious.
Not
but
at
Gary
all.
Is so shady immediately, yeah. In a way that's just so funny.
Well, Jason comes up and is like, oh, what happened? Like, did you have was there like a chemistry explosion? Like, making a joke.
Yeah.
And the guy's immediately like, I called the police and I get a stand-up comedian. To which I'm like,
phenomenal,
oh,
line.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny. But he also leans into it in the most icky way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and so the interesting thing about Gary is that he, in addition to being in this episode, he wrote the Barkley family ski vacation.
Hot dog.
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
In which he plays Rob.
Oh my gosh.
No way.
The
Donna's
Hulk?
Love interest.
Whoa.
And we've talked about that episode, and I don't think we talked about the fact that he wrote it.
No, you didn't talk about that fact. That's
so
crazy.
So he comes back.
We covered that one with Grace.
Yeah, we did. Uh-huh. He comes back in this episode to play shady Gary Birkid, and then goes on to co-create 321 Penguins with Phil Lawler.
What?
Oh, boy.
Yep.
No way.
He
truly
is
truly balling out.
Yeah, what a guy.
A rags to riches tale.
Is it?
No, no.
I don't know. This is rags, but you know, I like. Yeah, I think it's.
And I don't know that 321 Penguins is riches.
No, guesting on an AIO episode really puts you up to the top of the food chain in terms of wealth, you know.
But yeah, it's an interesting thing, like the credited creators for 321 Penguins, which, you know, if we ever kill this show off, maybe we'll do that one. But are Jeff Parker, who's the voice of Mr. Gary here, Nathan Carlson, who is the voice of freaking Richard Maxwell,
yeah,
and Phil Lawler. They're
yikes.
The ones credited with creating 321 Penguins.
Interesting.
As a show. And then Phil Vischer and Mike Naraki get developer crediting.
Huh.
But yeah.
Interesting.
It's a funny series of events here, right?
Certainly.
Well, I think it's super amusing, I guess is the word I'd say, that they show up and like Gary is pissed, which he should be. Like, he should be frustrated and mad because somebody broke in and like tore apart his lab, and when he expects it to be the cops, like, is met by Jason, who's just like quippy and like kind of rude for like showing up unannounced somewhere he doesn't belong, trying to get information on something that like he has no idea about.
Sure.
Like, okay, maybe you could treat him like a little bit more respect, since he obviously knows way more than you do. Like,
yeah,
really?
No, I don't know. Jason's really in love with being a smartass. So
yeah.
Yeah, no, he definitely came in swinging. And that was something that, like, I laughed at the joke initially, but then I started to sympathize a lot with the shady dude, and that's where the problems lie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, so the whole lab has been ransacked, and
it's a cutthroat game archaeology.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you would know if you'd watched Indiana Jones. and Whit and Charles have both like run away that morning and just left Gary here to deal with the thing. And he's a TA, but he's also referring to it as his lab.
Oh yeah.
Which is just strong TA energy.
Yeah.
Very strong. Big T energy, if you will.
Uh-huh. Andrew, were you ever a TA?
I was a TSS.
Ah, explain the difference, please.
Well, TA is typically like if you're in high school, you can like be a teacher's assistant, help grade and stuff. TSS is like therapeutic support staff. I'm like or I was with like kids with special needs that were in the class, like helping them get their work done and making sure they stayed on task and such.
Okay.
Mostly okay. just They're keeping them from related. Beating people up. Yeah, no, not at all. Nope. Same room though. I see him a lot.
Sure. You're just the hero version of a TA.
I would much rather not be the hero in the situation.
Andrew, you're a hero.
Yeah.
Can't avoid it.
So, I did just apply at a hospital. What can I say?
So then they decide that the Jason goes, okay, we need to, there's only one way we can proceed here, and that's by contacting someone bigger than my dad. And Eugene goes, you're going to pray? Which is reasonable. And Jason counters with, no, I'm contacting the U.S. government, and then a march starts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh boy.
It's so funny. And it's so funny to me how much of Jason's backstory is still a secret to mm-hmm. Eugene.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Because you can't know to the extent to which Jason has been involved with, you know, the NSA or whatever.
Yeah. Right. No, in this episode, not. Just the agency. We're keeping right. it right. really vague. Right.
As vague as possible.
But then Jason is on the phone with, who does
Alfred Brownlee.
Oh, right. He talks to Brownlee.
Yep.
And then, or he tries to talk to Brownlee?
No, he talks. No, he talks to him.
He talks to Brownlee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he calls and talks to someone at the agency.
Yeah.
And then Frank or something.
Yeah, I think
it's
Frank.
And then while he's on the phone with the person at the agency, in walks none other than Tasha Forbes.
Tasha.
He's like, we hear the one-sided telephone. We hear the one-sided telephone call, and Jason's all like, wait, what do you mean Tasha's not there? I need to talk to her.
Turn around, silly.
Yeah. Oh my word. She's so good.
She's mm-hmm. phenomenal. Okay. I have so much beef with this scene though, from the get-go. They're supposed to be engaged and they act like strangers.
Yeah.
Like, they exchange, like, what, at a base level, you could maybe consider pleasantries.
They
and
hug.
Not until after, like, she accuses, like, he says, I forget what he says, but she's like, you're acting like we aren't even engaged. And he's like, oh, yeah, hi. Like,
yeah, I don't.
That's not how you, like, greet the person that you're engaged to. Like, I'm sorry.
I don't know. It's, I think it's kind of cute and charming.
Ugh, you're the worst.
But
no, yeah,
I'm
Dylan, this is a 2-1 against you here.
Yeah, no, you should be against me. I love the, like, guy who is very involved with his work kind of missing the thing that's right in front of him of it all.
You're a monster.
Okay, that's fair.
I think that their banter is real. Like, I live for the banter between Tasha and Jason.
Yeah.
Their banter is good. I just wish they would have greeted each other better.
Just more affectionately.
Yeah,
I love
exactly.
a good kiss on the show. You
Honestly.
Know?
Well, they can't do it because she's on duty.
And they're not married, you know? That's, you know.
No, they've kissed.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I wasn't sure if that was that was too progressive for Adventures in Odyssey.
Too much broken glass.
No, we talked about it like 2 episodes ago.
Okay.
Very recently.
Nice.
But yeah, it's, well, okay, actually, technically it's her kissing Eugene, but you know.
We hear Tasha's lips.
Right. Okay. She kisses Eugene on the cheek to give to Jason.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, yep. I guess technically we haven't heard them kiss, but like,
sure. Close
you know.
Close enough.
Yeah. But it's, I don't know, look, Tasha immediately, like, Tasha walks into the room with so much confidence. And I'm mm-hmm. just, like, immediately in love with Tasha because, you know, she's the best.
I already yeah, was. And,
yeah, no, she rules. And, yeah, I don't know. And they're a little back and forth there where they're like, yeah, he's too caught up in, like, the game of it all. And she's just got to be like, hey, dude, like, you know, don't you realize, like, you know, we're engaged? And he's like, oh, shoot, yeah. And then they have their little hug. That sounds great on the audio, and I don't know, it's cute.
Yeah, no, it is. Well, and it's a small moment later. Yeah.
Right. The score comes in, it's beautiful, and then, like, Jason does become extremely annoying here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they banish Eugene to the bathroom to talk about agency stuff, and then Tasha's like, look, man, I can't talk to you about basically any of this either.
Yeah.
You're not with the agency at this point. And this is where Jason goes from, like, cute to, oh, no. Come on, dude. This is a problem.
Right, but respect such a phenomenal clapback, though, of, like, him being like, hey, Eugene, like, we can't talk with you here. You don't have any clearance. And then Tasha's just like, yeah, you don't either, so get out of here. Like, yeah, you tell him, Tasha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Get him. No, Eugene... Jason, yeah, not good in this scene. He is not listening. And then even after the fact, like, it's so clear that he was not in the correct headspace because he immediately realizes that, like, there's a reason she didn't say this. It's because maybe somebody was listening.
Right, right, because she ends on the a line about the that time they were at Trickle Lake sitting on a log, and he's like, oh, she means that we were bugged,
because there were bugs on the log.
Right. Yeah,
got him.
What a reach.
Where the bugs do be.
So he figures out that clue, but he doesn't get the reverse audio.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
You know, he's I like Jason's dumb. Like, he's overprotective in this episode.
He's a himbo.
And the previous one. And, like, it's, yeah, he's not doing, like, Tasha is so much better than him in so many ways.
Oh, 100%.
Like, at doing the whole secret agent thing that, like, it's just really shining through here. And it's great.
It's true.
When do Tasha and Mitch get together?
Oh, you know.
Come on now.
Our two hot secret agents. Who
we love.
I'd be on board for that, honestly. Like, I love Mitch and Connie, but, like...
Well, I mean, it'd be a great spinoff. Their spy adventures and such.
Yeah, I'm on board for that.
It's Focus's new, like, I don't know, 14 and up content.
Sure, well, and they cast a new actress to play Tasha, and she's done recent episodes, so...
Yeah.
Hmm.
Wouldn't be that hard.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jason goes into the bathroom with Eugene, and they, like, turn on the shower, and that's when Jason's like, we're bugged. She was trying to tell me that. I am less mad at her than I just was.
Right.
And yeah, he's like, Eugene, do you happen to have your passport on you? And Gene's like, yeah, of course. I always travel with it. He's like, great. Then we're going to the Middle East.
Yeah. What does he say? I'm a conscientious traveler or.
Yes.
Yeah.
I always,
like,
have it on me.
Yeah. You go, Eugene. I love that.
And then, Eugene fires back and says, yes. Presumably you're a treat.
No.
Oh, wait, yeah.
Before he does that, he has one of, like, just all time Will Ryan line deliveries where he's like, let me think about it.
Okay, I thought about it.
And then he says, right, your treat, I presume.
Yeah. Oh, man. So good. Honestly, their chemistry, like, that must have been so much fun to watch them record in the studio.
Oh, absolutely.
And everything. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's as annoying as Jason is written in this episode, at least with his interactions with Tasha, it is kind of fun to explore that side of the show through him.
Yeah,
definitely.
Oh, man. Then we get on the plane, and it's at that point that Eugene's like, oh, right, I did figure out the backmasking thing. Do you want me to explain that to you now? Which is just, once again, like, we have jumped through time, but we have not, like, nothing has progressed between these two people. Eugene was like, I had a breakthrough. And then they go into the bathroom, and Eugene doesn't explain his breakthrough, and then once they're on the plane, he's like, okay, now it's time to explain. And it's the obvious thing of, hey, if you play it backwards, it says, Jason, remember, how I do is nothing great.
Which, the sound engineering for when Jason is listening to the message and Eugene is talking to him is incredible. So good, of him being in, like, the headphones, and you can hear Eugene through them. I was in awe. I was like, this is beautiful.
No, that's actually Yeah, it's a really good point that you make, because the spatial audio of them, like, being on the plane and everything is very apparent. I don't know. Like, it does feel like you can totally imagine them sitting next to each other and, like, yeah, leaning over and, yeah. Very cool. No.
Mark Drury rules. Like,
he does. He can work. Soundscape a good plane, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man. How I do is nothing great. Adam, I assume you remember exactly what that means because you've listened to this a million times.
Yeah.
Andrew, do you remember? Okay, me either. So, Adam, you're not allowed to react onto whether or not we're right, but Andrew, do you want to take a stab at what you think that this is that this message is?
It's going to be hidden something. Like, I think he's going to hide the pages of the document in, like, his personal Bible, and he's going to ditch his Bible or something.
And you get that from How I Do Is Nothing Great?
Yeah, I think that's where it's going to lead to. I think it's going to be, like, a reference to a... I think it's missing words from a scripture reference or something.
Okay.
All right, classic.
Yeah.
My take, which, if this is truly the only thing this means, this is so freaking lame. So I'm like, I'm assuming it means something more, but How I Do Is Nothing Great. The first letter of each of those does spell hiding, which, if his whole message is hiding, yeah. I'm going to be so sad. I'm really hoping that is a, like, snarky throw him off the scent. Or it's got multiple meanings, but if it's truly just, hey, Jason, remember, hiding, yeah. I'm going to, like, yeah.
Sure.
Like, I'll be upset about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they arrive, they land, and Alfred Brownlee is there, and he greets both Eugene and Jason. They seem surprised that he's there.
Yeah.
Despite, like, Jason having talked to him earlier, it's unclear what their plan is. And where I said Gary is actually the most suspicious in this episode, Alfred should be the most suspicious.
100%.
This guy is totally up to something, but I'm still like, but Gary, though.
Yeah. Right.
Like, nothing that Alfred's saying really makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And they just trust him so immediately and innately, and I'm just like, it is,
well, because he's mentioned before in the episode,
like, he knows him through Wit.
Yeah, and he's previously in the Jesus Cloth episode, which is, like, the other, like, archaeology episode. He's either in it or at least mentioned.
Okay.
But, like, he's established previously as, like, a colleague of Wit's who is a archaeology person.
Interesting.
You know, it's Wit's Salah.
Yeah.
Right.
What does that mean?
That is a joke.
You're the worst.
Yeah.
Watch the movie.
Indiana Jones.
Hey, listeners, do yourself a favor. Watch both those movies and then come back and listen to Search for Wit. Your mind will be blown.
Yeah, Andrew.
Is this gonna make the Search for Wit better?
Yes.
Or is this gonna, okay,
this is gonna be Andrew,
like, it makes it so much better.
Maybe we do the Pokenberry thing.
Oh, okay.
Where you watch them in between episodes and then come back and you're like, ah, this all makes sense now.
Okay, all right. I'm down for a good callback. I just have to watch two Indiana Jones movies and then.
I mean, at least watch Raiders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, Last Crusade's worth it.
Oh, 100%.
Just remember, does Raiders open on a plane shot? Like a shot of a plane?
No.
Does it end on a shot of a plane?
There's like the montage where they're doing the plane overlaid on the map.
No. I'm thinking of... never mind. I don't... Yeah.
Okay.
Planes.
It opens him swapping idols.
Yeah. Like, well, no, yeah. I'm familiar with that. I thought
you've seen UHF.
Exactly.
Okay.
Anyway, Brownlee explains that they're being tracked by one of two groups, or possibly both groups. The groups are the Consortium, which is a bunch of liberal academics who want to disprove the Bible, but are actually terrorists, which does sound like a, like, Adventures in Odyssey writer wet dream.
Absolutely, man. No question.
That is everything we want in a straw man. But then they follow it up with the other people who could be tracking, called First Things, which is almost as bad a name as Hand Up. And is a conservative group who wants to preserve scripture and will do whatever it takes. And Brownlee explains that both organizations really desire power and don't actually care about the Bible.
Right. Well, I think why...
Which is like a very surprisingly even-handed take from Focus.
Yeah. I think that the reason that, like... Brownlee seems so sketchy is because of the way, number one, the way that he walks up to them in the airport, and number two, because he knows exactly so much about everything.
He knows so much, but he doesn't know the crucial stuff, and he's their only source for all information right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just not the position you want someone who you just met to be in.
Right.
Yeah.
But.
And but you're in a foreign country.
Yeah. So there's... and then he's explaining that, like, that both of these groups are now after the document, one to keep it, one to, you know, destroy it because of the most recent revelation. And they're like, what recent revelation? We don't know this. And he's like, oh, I assumed, like, you had heard.
Right.
And it's that the parchment that Whit found contain, like, the ending remarks state that Jesus was not raised from the dead, and it includes specific instructions with which to find his bones. So now we have a MacGuffin.
MacGuffin.
We gotta go find the bones of Jesus Christ.
Oh yeah.
Amen.
Come on.
And this is maybe Jason's better scene, but like this, Eugene immediately like freaks out and is just like, shoot, this is going to like shatter my faith.
Right.
And Jason's like, we know so little, and also like, eh. But it's just like, it's the difference between, someone who, like, Eugene's a new Christian.
Yeah.
How newly Christian is Eugene at this point?
Within the past year of
that. Okay. That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure, and I was like, psh, they'll know. I'll ask them.
So it's like we've got a new Christian who's very like facts focused, and then we've got like a spy who's like, you know, clearly had his faith for a while, like grew up with this, and is kind of like both skeptical of the validity of this statement and also is like, I don't know, I'd probably survive anyway.
It is it is a very interesting juxtaposition of responses from the two of them. And, like, I mean, if somebody were to find the Q document, that would be a big old deal.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. If you could, if you could be like, this document is clearly a source document for the New Testament, regardless of what it contains, that's huge. In the same way that I'm like, the one that seems... Because I'm a little skeptical about the existence of a Q document. The version of this that does sometimes, like, where I'm just like, what would happen? Is, like, there are so obviously letters that Paul wrote that aren't contained within the Bible. And I do often think about that, of just like, what if we found one of the other Corinthians or like some of these other letters? And I'm like, what do you do with something that's like clearly written by someone who wrote the Bible?
What if we were to find new biblical literature that is not canon?
Right.
Like, what? Like
that, like, that is earth-shaking.
There's 67 books.
right. Like, how do you reckon with that? Because so much of the idea of, like, the... Especially, like, I don't know, modern-day Protestant view of, like, Reformed view of the Bi Boys. Like, this is like unequivocal canon. Like, the 66 books are all there in the exact manner that they're supposed to be, and are like the only ones preserved with like specific like godly intent.
Yeah.
And so it is like, oh yeah, if there is something beyond that, that does become very like foundationally challenging.
Yeah.
It just require a lot of rethink. So
reform the reformed.
But yeah,
it's just reformation all the way down.
I mean, that sure. And then they all head out to Wit's dig site.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's basically the end of the episode.
Yeah. Boy howdy. What a thrill ride. I'm very excited to watch Raiders of the Lost Ark if this is going to make the next two parts significantly better.
It's I'm so disappointed that you haven't, Andrew, because it, like...
Well, no, I mean, I watched it once with my brother, like, years ago, and I don't remember much beyond, like, the iconic bits of...
Yeah, you're just really missing out on all the enjoyment from The Search for Wit.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
I think like Pokenberry, it probably plays pretty well regardless of whether or not...
Oh, sure.
Well, yeah, certainly.
But there is some very clear, direct...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would argue this might play better than Pokenberry without all of the
sure, the references aren't quite as ham-fisted as Pokenberry is what you're saying.
Yeah,
that's probably fair. It also if you understand the genre of it's just an adventure movie in so many ways. Like, it's I mean, like, the fact that it's specifically like Middle East and biblically tied is very Indiana Jones. But like, if you've seen A National Treasure, you get like the genre we're playing in.
That's true.
If you've seen Romancing the Stone, you get the genre we're playing in.
Right.
Like, there's a lot of stuff that like uses this template. Actually, my recommendation coming off this movie, because I assume everyone's already seen Indiana Jones, is to watch Ishtar. Because Ishtar is also like playing in this space in a really like fun and compelling way.
Very.
Both of you guys
that was a movie night, wasn't it?
Yeah, Adam, you were there for Ishtar.
I think so.
Ishtar, I was not.
So we have we have two struggling musicians who book a show in Morocco and end up being like dummies who find their way into an Indiana Jones movie.
Very cool.
It's so fun. I love Ishtar.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good
more
one.
More people should watch it.
If I watch that, is it going to make me like this more?
I don't know that it will, but if you're in the mood for something in this realm.
If I'm still itching.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Like, if just imagine like Jason and Eugene are not like competent.
Yeah.
Instead, they're like Wooten and Bernard.
Yeah.
doing this episode. Facts. And, like, it'll all kind of click.
Yeah.
Like,
love to see
and
it.
And it's Dustin Hoffman and, who is the other really obvious prominent dude who plays the co-lead, who is like famous and a director and hasn't made anything in a really long time and is just a weird guy and owns the rights to freaking, oh my word, he owns the Dick Tracy rights. Why can I not think of his name?
Warren Beatty.
There we go.
I was gonna see if you're gonna get there, but I had looked it up.
I'm so glad that I got to. He owns the rights to Dick Tracy before I came up with the man's name.
Yeah, that's
what
awesome.
A messed up thing. but yeah. Anyways,
very interesting.
We're not necessarily in the plugs category, but I'm plugging Ishtar. And
sure.
Any final notes for this episode that we want to set up? Adam, how do you feel about the fact that you don't get to come back for the next two?
Honestly, a little disappointed, but I'm very excited for what's coming for the pod. Like, I think it's a very fun series. You know, I love these episodes. I think they're super fun. I think that the enjoyment value has not at all gone down from the first time I listened to them to the whatever, 700th, I don't know how many times I've listened to it, but I every time I enjoy it just as much as I did the first time. And that is so rare in any, like, movie, TV show, audio, whatever, to be able to say that. So I think, you know, that just says something to the writing and the, like, ability of Adventures in Odyssey to have these episodes and keep them solid. It's just crazy. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It is. It's a good episode.
It's really good.
It's so strong. I mean, I like just the three parts in general from what I can remember. I mean, it's obviously iconic for a reason. You know, people like it. But I think that it is so interesting how pivotal this is for the show as a whole in a way that I never really fully contextualized until covering it for this show. Like, obviously,
sure,
as a kid growing up, I knew that this is where the wits got swapped and everything, but
I
didn't know that either.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I didn't know the wits changed until we hit album. Like, I knew they changed between 50 and 51. I did not realize that they changed before that.
Okay. Yeah. I think same. My older siblings just told me, I guess. I don't know.
Right.
Sure, that makes sense.
Well, No, it does. But
yeah, no.
Not me.
So this is, like, obviously the... It's iconic. The way that it exists within Odyssey, I think, is really cool. And I think that it showcases what the show does best, which is riffing off of other people's ideas.
Sure.
Says a man who has not witnessed those other ideas.
Certainly.
And also said as a man who all he does is riff off other people.
That's
also what this show does best.
Yes.
None of my jokes are my own.
There's no originality for sure.
If you want a real joke from Dylan, you get the dumb 4chan thing that I had to queue up for like 5 minutes before I could find a way to spit it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyways. No, I really enjoyed it. I'm really excited to remember how this all gets tied up. I have some idea, but nothing really concrete. And
sure.
Yeah, if the next two parts are nearly as enlightening as this one, I think it's only going to get better from here.
Well said. All right. I do have to hit on one thing that we missed earlier that is my favorite line in the entire episode.
Oh my word. Yeah, dude.
So Gary, when Jason and Eugene are leaving, Gary's like griping about all of his things that are broken. He's like, my microscope or whatever. The last thing that he's concerned about is, he says, not my Assyrian chamber pot. It's like, wait, that's what you value so much, is something that people peed in? Like, what?
And poop.
And pooped. But it's like, why is that the one big thing in that lab that you're so concerned about?
No, it is funny. And the way it's delivered,
it's
funny.
It's just so good.
That's a good joke.
That's the one joke in this episode that just every time makes me laugh, and I think about probably more than most of the rest of the jokes in this episode.
Oh, and Gary saying, my mother was sad too.
Oh, yeah.
That was solid. Really, this is just a Gary fan episode.
That's
what it's become.
Gary's shady, but he has some great lines in the very brief time that he's in there.
He's the anti-hero we need.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, man.
Plugs? All right.
Yeah. What do you have to plug, Mr. Deckard?
Oh, man. You know, I don't know.
You don't have to plug. Your plug can just be Indiana Jones.
So here's my plugs. If you want to follow me on social media, go for it. I never post. But you can if you want to.
Right. Links in the description.
Sure. Yeah. My plugs are, always tell your family that you love them and make sure that they feel valued. It's summertime. Go be active. Do stuff outside and experience the world and for all the beauty it is.
Lovely. Wow.
So there are my plugs.
I was going to plug Survivor, a reality television show.
Hey,
a real good season going on right now, and I'm enjoying it.
And 100%. I already plugged Ishtar.
Yep.
With all that being said, we will be back next week with episode 356, The Search for Wit, Part 2.
Woo!
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.